Today on the Potential Psychology Podcast.
The PLAY model. PLAY stands for pleasing, living, agonizing, and yielding. And in essence, pleasing and living are anything that sort of fill us up. And they're good reasons to fill your life up with pleasing and living activities, right? Agonizing would be anything that is really puts you in a negative valence state. You're like, I just don't want to be doing this right now. And takes a lot of energy, whether that's mental or physical energy, right? What's really problematic is sort of the yielding category, and that is things where it doesn't take a lot of energy to do them. So we tend to do them mindlessly, but when we look back at them, they weren't pleasurable at all.
Welcome to the Potential Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, psychologist Ellen Jackson, and this is the show in which we explore what it is to be human and how we as humans can fulfill our potential. Welcome back to the Potential Psychology Podcast. I almost forgot what it was called for a moment there. The Potential Psychology Podcast. This is our second episode in our fun and well-being series. And I have my co-host, Mike Rucker, with me. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Fantastic. That is good to hear. It's been really interesting on the back of our last conversation where we explored a little of your story and some of the science of positive psychology, how it's grown, how it's changed, and the role that techniques, interventions, things like fun and whimsy can have in perhaps creating or bringing us some of that happiness, some of that sense of well-being that might have been missing or that might not have been quite as accessible using other tools and techniques from this field early on in the science of it, and all of your personal experience with that. And it's got me reflecting on how I incorporate fun into my life. I think it has been something that I've tried to do, but perhaps haven't labeled it as that. So maybe there's an opportunity for us to talk a little bit about what exactly we mean by fun, because it's probably a bit like happiness. Our listeners, maybe all of us, might have a sense that fun is really associated with those really positive, affective states, feeling joyous. You know, it has to be the funnest thing ever. We all like to think a bit in extremes, don't we? That binary sense of something's either fun or it's not fun. And then if it's fun, it has to be this really buoyant, exuberant. But of course, that's not just what fun is it? Certainly not in the sense that you're talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it is and it isn't. So it's funny because like there is a binary aspect to it, right? In science, we call it valence. So for this type of work, whenever you're kind of deconstructing the construct, you do need to have a definition that's agreed upon, right? So that you can discuss it, because certainly happiness is different to different people and fun is different to different people. And I wanted fun to be a big tent when I looked at it through a scientific lens. So the way that I define it is anything on the positive side of valence. And so in a weird way, it is certainly binary. Like you are either having fun or you're not. But it just means you're either finding pleasure in an activity or you're not. And so when you look at how you engage in any given activity, is this something that you want to continue to do or is it something that's sort of depleting? And sometimes that can be very passive. So I've in my work come up with my own model. I call it the PLAY model. And so PLAY stands for pleasing, living, agonizing, and yielding. And in essence, pleasing and living are anything that sort of fill us up. And they're good reasons to fill your life up with pleasing and living activities, right? Agonizing activities are things that most of us can identify with.
Nobody wants to do an agonizing activity just by the nature exactly. of the name.
Yeah. And so I meant to give a little bit of context. So agonizing would be anything that is really puts you in a negative valence state. You're like, I just don't want to be doing this right now. And takes a lot of energy, whether that's mental or physical energy, right? And so unfortunately, life is going to be full of those types of activities. So again, it would be toxic positivity to say that you can engineer a life where none of those exist. But there generally are opportunities to lighten the load, especially if you look at how you're doing something in a mindful way. What's really problematic is sort of the yielding category, and that is things where it doesn't take a lot of energy to do them. So we tend to do them mindlessly, but when we look back at them, they weren't pleasurable at all. And you know, I don't like to villainize social media too much because there's certainly a lot of aspects that can be pleasurable, especially if you're using it as a connection tool to real friends. But oftentimes when you look back at long durations, especially for folks that might have a mild addiction to social media, they can't tell you how they spent the time. You know, it's a completely mindless activity. But things that would also fit in that category are things like friendships of convenience, right? Where you spend time with someone mainly because it was either a habituated activity or a sense of duty that doesn't really exist, or an activity that used to bring you joy but doesn't anymore, and it's just on your schedule so you believe that you have to do it. Or habitual entertainment watching. So not necessarily watching a movie that really lights you up that you're excited about, or maybe a weekly event with your partner where it's more about spending time with that person than it is what you're watching. But I'm talking about, you know, folks that kind of plop down on the couch on a Saturday and let 5 hours waste away and they couldn't tell you what they were watching, or they were binge watching something they weren't really even interested in. So all of those things, you know, we tend to sort of discount like, oh, well, I don't do them, until you actually become mindful of how you're spending your time. And then you're like, oh, okay. You know? And so what can you do when you identify those activities? With agonizing, you can oftentimes find ways to kind of flip it. So a tale that I tell as kind of an example of what my wife and I did, washing our children. And so this was years ago, it's sort of changed now, but during that time, neither one of them liked to take baths, and my wife and I certainly didn't like to engage in that activity. So yeah, it was a lose-lose. And it got to the point where my wife and I would kind of hold out until the other one would begrudgingly be like, okay, well, one of us has to do this. And it was always a nightmare. And so we couldn't afford a full-time nanny at the time. And this idea of having someone just come in episodically and do such an intimate act was sort of weird. But then we were like, we used a tool like story editing, and we're like, why is that weird? Why, if we were rich enough to afford a nanny, that it's not a big deal? But because that's all we want to get done, it is a big deal. And so ultimately we kind of laughed at the fact that, you know, we thought it was, and used the money that we did have to have someone come in and help us with that. And what we did in exchange for that time that we got back is we left the house and we went and had dinners together. So here was 3 hours a week that were driving us batty, and we were able to replace that activity with someone that the kids really enjoyed being with. So it was a win for them too. Mm. And my wife and I were able to reconnect and, you know, have a few episodes a week where we were able to reconnect. And then this magical thing happened where even when we came back and it was time for us to do baths, the kids liked it more because we sort of appropriated the games that the babysitter had made with the kids. And there was this reprieve from the daily grind of having to do it. So it became novel again. And that's just one example, you know, because it was pertinent to me. But whenever you look at something that you really don't enjoy, oftentimes there's a creative solution to make something that's just awful into something more interesting, whether, you know, you're able to replace it or potentially add a component to it that completely, you know, reintroduces you to that activity. I've heard of folks that hated, you know, going through their inbox, but were able to gamify the ability of like, how many emails can I read in an hour? I don't think that would work for me, but it worked for them. And then with yielding, it's just easy, right? Like, oh, I meant a hypothetical, but I can't believe that I'm on Instagram for 3 hours a week, right? And just saying, I make the conscious choice to, you know, an hour a week or whatever it is my goal. And I'm going to figure out a more interesting thing to do with those 2 hours. Going back to the pleasurable activities. So the living quadrant are really these peak experiences. And so that's going to be unique to anybody, right? That can be a spiritual practice. For me, it's, you know, really pushing myself through sport, but it's anything that kind of connects you to something bigger, either through the form of mastery, through the form of spirituality, or through acts of love and kindness, you know, giving back. But it's, you know, this growing thing that it does take a lot of energy. So it's not something that you could do all the time where you would burn yourself out. But it is important to kind of sprinkle those things throughout your life so that you feel some sort of sense of growth. But the thing that doesn't get enough attention are really finding opportunities for these pleasing activities. So those are things that light us up. It's what we talked about in the previous episode of folks that are catering to children and the primary caregivers for aging adults. that don't feel like they can take anything off the table for them. Well, what we know from this work comes from Dan Gilbert out of Harvard and another gentleman by the name of Matthew Killingsworth. If we aren't engaging in those pleasing activities, we start to drain the energy and the vitality that we have to give to every other activity in our lives. But that happens slowly over time. So it's quite insidious, because when we're not having that type of fun, we think we can just soldier on to the next week. But slowly but surely, we're giving less. We don't have the empathy that connects us to the people that we need to serve, you know, especially if we're driven by a sense of duty, and we can't be our best selves. So when you think about it in that context, that we have a whole host of empirical evidence to suggest that if we're not taking a little bit off the table for ourselves, that we can't be those folks that serve others, then it kind of flips the script. Like, okay, finding 2 or 3 hours a week to sort of fill me up so that I feel a little bit of joy so I can be my best self actually can like feed into that sense of duty that oftentimes gets in the way for a lot of people to actually enjoy a little bit of life.
Yeah. And look, I think there's probably a lot of parents listening who might be able to relate to that experience, particularly when children are young, but also, you know, mine are now heading into teenage years and it's a whole different set of challenges where you can just gradually and slowly lose yourself over time because you are so committed to, especially if you're juggling up with, you know, there's all of the domestic responsibilities, there might be work, there might be other caring responsibilities, the challenges of children, and without making a conscious effort, because there is a tendency to say, this is my job, this is my identity, this is my responsibility, this is what I do, that by not allowing that time for ourselves, you know, you don't notice until you've actually get to a point where you realize, oh, there's, it becomes a mental health crisis or an identity crisis. You know, I've lost myself. I don't even know who I am anymore because I've been this other doing person for so long. So I love that notion of story editing and how you can kind of flip this around to start thinking about, I'm no good to anyone. I think this has been the phrase that I've used and certainly used with clients. You know, it's the notion of putting the air mask on before you assist others. You know, I'm no good to anyone if I've fallen in a heap. And we don't want anyone to get to the point of falling in a heap. So it's starting to kind of reel that back a bit and say, you know, how do we actually implement some of this stuff into our lives early on and on an ongoing basis so that we never get to a point of falling in a heap, but also, as you say, we have the energy, we have the empathy, we have the creativity, we have everything that we need to be able to continue to do all of those other roles to the best of our ability, whilst also maintaining a sense of who we are and allowing ourselves to be still ourselves, to have joy, to have fun. Seems silly that we need to actually make that explicit, but I think we do.
Yeah, no, I mean, certainly it needs to be valued, right? Because if it's not valued, anything that's not valued isn't prioritized. And sometimes you need to understand why it should be valued. And so that's part of what we're doing here. But even if you don't really want to operate from, you know, the paradigm of you can't pour from an empty cup, then where are there opportunities where you can at least experience joy? So oftentimes a parent will insist, well, I can't find a couple hours for myself. It's just, you know, and so, okay, that's great. But the way that you've described your daily activity, you're looking at every single hour as sort of a sense of duty. So this time that you have with your children, are you co-creating a space where you can actually have fun together? Or are you just sitting on a park bench kind of wallowing? And, you know, again, that introspection that we talked about on the last episode, like where you're now deep in thought about how you don't want to be there. That's a great opportunity where you can use that agency and autonomy and talk to your children and say, hey, you know what? I'm not having fun. Why don't we find an experience we can co-create together? Because I'll tell you, kids are so great at that, right? If a kid's not having fun with their friend, they're going to say, I don't want to do this anymore. And so what's wrong with a parent? I mean, you probably know this from transactional analysis, right? We know that we need to act in that childlike state. And what a great opportunity, because you already have to be there anyways. So it doesn't even have to be something that you go and do for yourself. It can be reassessing these things that are, you know, in your daily life and being like, how can I take back a little bit of control by just realizing that you do have some say in these activities that you engage in, whether it's what you do at work or how you act as a parent.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you say that, because I had this funny experience recently where I had that moment. So I have two boys, they've just turned 14 and 10. The little one was playing with balloons and he filled this balloon up with water in the kitchen sink and he wanted to carry it outside. This is after dinner, so it's probably about 7 o'clock at night or something. And he wanted to carry this. And of course, he'd filled it so that the balloon was sort of at its maximum capacity. And so he wanted to get it out of the kitchen sink and take it outside. And I don't, he was going to drop it on something, see what happens. He's a scientist by nature, so everything's an experiment with him. And so our eldest son was helping him because it was quite unwieldy. It got quite big and he wasn't quite tall enough to get good purchase from the kitchen sink and lift it up. So he kind of helped him and the little one's holding it to his chest. And I'd said to my eldest, can you just go and open the back door, which was just around the corner, to let him out? And I stood there and watched as, and I actually took it because I thought this could go horribly wrong. This is one of these things. So I was actually videoing it at the time because I thought this has disaster written all over it. And I stood there and I watched as the little one's holding this incredibly full to bursting balloon full of water and he walks past and his older brother just pulls his hand back and just pokes this balloon with his finger. And of course, because it was so full, it just burst and water went everywhere. It was all down the front of him. It was all, and I could hear myself because I record, I can hear myself saying, don't you dare, because I could see what was about to happen and then water's everywhere. And for me, it was a real moment of, I can get cross here. I can say, look at the mess you've made. That was an awful thing to do. But I have a choice. And in that moment, I chose to just laugh and just, you know, we just all laughed together, you know, despite the fact that there was an inch of water all over the kitchen floor and it was 7 o'clock at night. But I can almost remember the moment, and maybe because I've captured it on video and watched it again, it's kind of reinforced it for me, of this moment of, you've got two ways to think about this situation. You can be the angry, cranky mum who says, look at the mess you've made. You know, what are we going to do about this? Who's going to clean this up? That was the wrong thing to do to your brother, blah, 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 blah. Or I can just laugh along with you. And in the end, and it would have had such a different emotional outcome for all of us. You know, I would have been the ongoing cranky mum then for the next hour. They would have both been, you know, mum's mean and, you know, whatever else they might have thought or said at the time. And they, you know, maybe felt some guilt or maybe felt some shame. But instead it was like, no, this is a playful, fun moment. This was a wonderful thing to capture on video. We all watched it again. We laughed. Went to show my husband, and I don't think he was that impressed at the moment. That was his choice to make.
Good on your youngest for having the resilience not to get mad, I think.
Yes, I think because we all laughed, everyone just, it was a fun moment. But yeah, so that to me, just as you were describing that, that sense of even in a particular moment like that, making a choice about, is this going to be fun or is this not? Now, I don't know how easy it is to consciously make those decisions, but without that awareness that we have a choice to frame things in a certain way, one way or the other, and what the impact of that is. You know, those things, we say they're simple, they're not necessarily easy and they do take time to do, but a way to kind of turn something that could be awful into a little bit of fun. It was certainly a mood booster.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's really a regulation of emotion, right? And like you said, just to give grace to anyone that's listening that doesn't feel like, you know, they would have that type of resilience. That's totally okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, again.
And I may not have on another occasion either.
Yeah. I mean, it's dependent on your affect leading up to that situation, right? And being part of a parent is forgiving yourself to some degree. I think we all have good days and bad days. That certainly sounds like a really fun day. But I think above and beyond emotional regulation, and again, all of what we've discussed is building that type of flexibility so you can have those moments and know that that's probably going to have a better outcome, you know, as long as it doesn't become a habitual behavior between your kids. Like,
yeah.
You know, again, speaking of TikTok, I've seen where those things, they have a whole season of just pulling pranks on each other. And I'm like, that seems exhausting. You know? But also stacking the deck in your favor, right? Like, how is it so that what I'm doing on a weekly basis are things that I'm going to actually enjoy, especially if you know going into it, so you have a premonition that it's going to go poorly, you're almost guaranteeing that it will anyways, because you're doing the opposite of what you just described. You already have this predisposition to being like, if anything goes wrong, I'm going to be pissed off because I don't even want to be here in the first place. Yeah.
Mm. And I'm interested because, as you were speaking before, I know from talking to a lot of friends, colleagues, particularly other women, but also men, that we can use, or we often do use, things like exercise as our kind of me time, so to speak. And a lot of people will say that it's going for my run or going to the gym, that's my break, that's my mental health break. It's really, and you know, there are lots of positive benefits associated with exercise. Definitely. For mental health. Is it a fun thing? I may be saying that from a very particular perspective, somebody who doesn't necessarily find those things fun. But is there something in these activities that perhaps give us that jolt of joy, to use my colleague Marie McLeod's phrase, or give us a sudden boost of heightened emotion, you know, whether it's laughter or whatever it may be? Is there something about those activities that is different perhaps than using a self-care activity like exercise?
Yeah, so that's really interesting. I think, again, as we mentioned, I forget if it was in this episode or the previous one, fun is a really big tent. And I know it was in the previous episode, I talked about an interview I just had with an Oxford professor, and we talked about exercise. So it's funny, the reason I'm kind of stumbling on my words is, in my day job, we run wellness centers. And so what we deliver is fitness as an intervention. And I think one of the inconvenient truths about fitness is, although we know it's immensely beneficial for both our mental and physical well-being, 4 out of 5 people don't find it fun, you know? And so there's certain ways to mitigate that, right? One, you can be expansive about what fitness means. So is that a yoga class that adds components of both sort of mental renewal and movement? Is it a way of using activity bundling to make it more fun? So for me, that's really high engaging music where I'm kind of lost in the music and kind of forget that I'm doing activity in the first place. You know, because I just don't believe no pain, no gain. I think that's that could be a whole nother episode, right?
But couldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it plays right into hustle culture, which we did talk about in the previous episode. We now know that, you know, my field is contributing to a lot of the body dysmorphia and things because of that. And so why not make it an enjoyable experience so that people want to come back? And then the third is that there is a subset of folks that do find it fun. So if you're one of them, you're in the minority. But if you do, then great, use it. And I feel like I was in the minority, which, as I was unpacking this as a scientist to answer your question specifically, I had confirmation bias. I'm like, oh, of course, everyone likes to run marathons. Like,
no, they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which, interesting, again, you know, this notion of, because I've consciously moved away when I talk about the benefits of physical exercise for well-being with clients. And I've consciously moved away from using the term exercise because I've tested this with so many groups. Now I say, when I say the word exercise, what comes into your head? And everyone either says running or the gym. Like, it's just those two things seems to be our complete sense of what exercise is. And yet, if we do look at it from a broader perspective and say, well, really, you know, from a mental health point of view, it doesn't have to be either of those things. It's the activity of movement, depending on what kind of physical benefits you might be looking for as well, you know, degrees of heart rate increase, et cetera, may play a part. But if you're purely looking at it in terms of just general well-being, then any kind of movement that you enjoy is going to be worthwhile. And so find the thing that you enjoy and do more of it. And something that I did recently, which I think actually incorporates that notion of the living activities that you mentioned. So in that play model of having those living things, was I had the opportunity to learn how to ballroom dance for a charitable activity. So one of our local charitable funds puts on a Dancing with Our Stars. So that TV kind of show where you go and learn to dance and then you have to perform in front of an audience. So ours was a live audience. We did two dances. We did one, there was 10 of us who were just members of the community without necessarily having a dance background. And then we were partnered with people who had significant dance experience. And we had one individual dance, which was kind of that, I'm going to say competitive. It was a fun competition. It wasn't a whole lot of actual competition in there, but it was fun. For most of us, it was the personal challenge of learning how to do this dance in proficient enough a way that we could perform it in front of a live audience without being completely terrified, forgetting what you're doing. In my case, I was always worried I was going to fall, you know, trip over my dress. And it was a 10-week thing. So it was a decent chunk of time of learning, of practicing, of rehearsing. It took a lot, but it was a wonderful experience. And it was an exercise experience for me as well. You know, it's quite a physical thing to do, to learn to ballroom dance, and very cognitive.
Well, and then the progression of mastery, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was a big part of it, was that going from I've got no idea what I'm doing, and then over a quite intensive period, being able to get to a point where you could perform that in front of an audience in the full hair, makeup, dress, heels, the whole bit. So, you know, fabulous experience, once in a lifetime type thing. But yeah, I'd not thought about it until you started to phrase it in that sense of that was a living experience. That was one of those, I'm really glad I did it. I'm also kind of really glad it's done now, but I'm really glad that I did it, because I think it contributed to a more expansive sense of who I am and what I can do.
Well, and that's what it's meant to do, stretch, right? I mean, I borrowed those concepts from Maslow, like most of us do. And so, you know, it just ties into peak experience and that idea of, I can't take ownership of this, but I get asked about it a lot because it's a construct of fun. Someone in the States has kind of invented this idea of type one fun and type two fun. And type two is what you just described, where it's not fun in the moment, but when you look back on it, damn it.
Yeah, like sometimes it really wasn't fun at the moment. It was very mindful. It was a really mindful experience. You were so totally absorbed in what you were doing, but you wouldn't necessarily always describe it as fun.
And once you got to like week 7, 8, 9, did you find that you were experiencing moments of flow?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Having said that, our dance teacher, and to her credit, because it would have been extraordinarily, I mean, she'd taken 10 people of different shapes, sizes, abilities, nobody with a dance background, and had to get them performance ready. And she had such a wonderful way of teaching, where she was always just gently adding something extra. So you kind of felt like you were getting to a point where, right, I know what I'm doing here. And then suddenly said, now we're going to add the arms. And you're like, really? And something else. So never quite got to that point. But yeah, certainly flow in those moments and, you know, getting to performance ready, where you just suddenly realize, oh my God, I can just do this now without having to think about it.
But that's a sign of an amazing teacher.
Oh, she is.
Yeah. Anyone that adds components, because I think, I mean, I was certainly guilty of that, is like, you want to teach people everything all at once, right? Because it's like, I just want to get you from A to B. But great teachers know, you know, you sort of gain a certain level of mastery of one thing and then, you know, add the next, even though, you know, as a student, you're sort of like, well, I just want to be a dancer.
Yeah, exactly. Really? We have to keep doing more? Yeah, no, incredible. And it's incredible. And I reflected on that to her at times, was, you know, being on that other side of that learning experience and what it was like. So, yeah. The other thing I wanted to pick up on, Mike, was the notion of the yielding activities that you mentioned. One of those ones, because again, and this is where really, I think, but let me know, where the importance of mindfulness comes in around just being aware of what you're doing. I had COVID a couple of months ago. Whilst I wasn't left particularly unwell, it certainly knocked me around, and in terms of just, you know, reduced energy for a while. And it took me, I reckon, probably a few weeks after before I realized that I'd lapsed into a habit of, yes, just mindlessly scrolling social media, because I'd been sort of low energy. And it's always, it seems to become, or seems to have become, certainly for me, but I observe it in my especially my teenage child as well, the default activity, the thing that you do when you don't quite have the energy or you don't quite know what to do next, you know, where there's an element of either physical or cognitive input and commitment required to, whether it's get up and go and, you know, pack your school bag, or in my case, start on the next challenging work task, where you just kind of go, I'll just pick up my phone and sit there. And I just found that those periods were getting longer and longer. And I did eventually get to a point where I was able to say to myself, this is not helping me right now.
Right.
But those periods were lost use time.
Well, there's a few things to unpack there, right? One is the power of variable rewards. So the folks that engineered these pieces of software understand that no matter what it is, the shiny nickel, the slot machine, the next funny meme, those are all things that our brains kind of crave when we're in a passive state because they don't take much energy, but we kind of accept them as a reward, even though they're not worth anything. And so anyone deserves an amount of grace if they're kind of stuck in that, because these things have been designed to hijack our attention. And so to your point, it does require some mindfulness, sometimes some time, right? Like if you're really enjoying yourself, I don't want to prescribe a certain amount of time. You know, if for 3 hours you can remember those whole 3 hours because maybe you have a small subset of friends on your friend list and you really do care about the entire corpus of pictures of these seven individuals, that's probably not likely. You probably have 800 friends, 500 that you don't even know why you're looking at their photos. But
not to mention all the stuff on social media now that has nothing to do that with the, we're not things the ads, that you signed up to, whether they're ads or, you know, suggested posts seems to be the new thing too. Watch this person, see that.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need somebody else's algorithm, you know, telling you what you need to, right. And so understanding that, you know, you kind of described a self-experiment, right? We talked about that in the last episode. You were living one and you understood that that wasn't helpful after a certain amount of time. And so you replaced it with a different activity and you are in tune enough to understand that that was better use of your time. Some people need the nudge, like, hey, you know, let's peel back how you're spending your time. Oh yeah, I don't want to be doing that. Sometimes it takes that extra step. That's why folks like you and I exist, right? To help people sort of identify that. But the most important part of villainizing yielding is what we know about how we understand time with regards to cognitive function. And so when we're engaged in a lot of those types of activities where we're not encoding the memory, we're just kind of passing time. What's often used in studies is commutes to work, you know, because a lot of these studies were done pre-pandemic where most of us were in a car. And so they'll look back and ask people to think back to their commute. And what we know from neuro studies in this area is that very small regions of the brain will light up because single events that happen over and over again are stored as a single unit of time when we recall them. Like, this is how I drove to work, right? You don't think about the 100 different times you drove to work when you're thinking about that. And so that happens with almost any yielding activity. This is the time I spent on social media, but you wouldn't be able to describe the 2,000 different pictures that you had. Now replace that time with a safari in Africa where you're learning about 200 different animal species and everything is new, you know, from a sensory standpoint, the visual cues, the smells, the things that you hear. You know, someone can go hours and hours and hours describing that, sometimes even more time than the actual event took place. And so that's why it's so important to sort of replace these yielding activities to the best that you can with activities that sort of light you up, because then when it's time to look back in your life, you know, in the golden years, you'll have this corpus of memories to look back on and have rich context of how you lived your life versus what we know from, you know, the work of Bronnie Ware and others, where folks that have kind of lived a habituated life, you know, where their weekly routine was the same week after week, they kind of feel like their life flew by them. And so whenever I'm kind of describing why it's so important to be mindful of these yielding activities, that's it. Because if you kind of habituate around them, especially, you know, if a couple of decades go by, you'll look back at your life and wonder what happened.
I'm wondering whether when it comes to those yielding activities, so, you know, using that example of social media again, you know, I must stop doing this because there's other things I need to be doing. But, you know, I think for many of us, we might be replacing a kind of a mindless activity with a sense of duty and responsibility. So some of those other, maybe they're agonizing activities, maybe they're not, but, you know, I should be working. I should be unpacking the dishwasher. I should be, you know, getting ready to go and collect the kids from school, whatever it might be. So when we talk about replacing them, is it about that valence or of that, I need to replace this. What else could I do with this time that I've got, or how could I create a habit around doing things that are going to fill me up?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think it's safe to say that that's time wasted. I made a good sort of argument why that's the case, and I believe it wholeheartedly. And so why add another thing from your to-do list? I mean, that's another thing we talked about in the previous episode, but one of the things that we unpacked was sort of this Puritan work ethic. And the problem in, you know, whether you're a professional or not, we live in a world where our to-do lists are endless. So there are certain things that have to get done, but that's generally, you know, can be contained within a few hours. And so just adding something else into that space what makes that different than any other week? Like, that wasn't going to get done before. Why does it have to get done now? Right. So taking that time off the table and figuring it out. Because generally, at least, you know, when I'm doing this work with others, it's generally time on the weekends, especially for parents. And that can almost always be what you described. Like, why not go and walk the dog and spend an hour in nature? So maybe that is a chore. Like, I have to walk the dog, but you could make it an experience that's enjoyable, whether that's listening to your favorite podcast while you walk the dog or whatever it is. But yeah, replacing it with just more chores, that's ill-advised.
Yeah. But I think it seems, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I feel like for many people that might be the default. So I'm curious to know then, Mike, what do you replace your yielding activities with? What are the things that you do?
I've been really trying to be mindful of co-creating those experiences with my kids. So like just this weekend, I had been engaging in some yielding activities and replaced it, took my kid to the water park because I hadn't been to the water slides for a long time and it was something that he wanted to do. And so since it was something that we both enjoyed, we went and did that. Because what he would want me to do is sit on the computer with him and play Minecraft, but that would be from a sense of duty. And I might do that sometimes to kind of capitulate, but doing that habitually is not something that's necessarily fun for me. So
I have a Minecrafter in my house too. And I can tell you sometimes it falls into the agonizing category a little bit.
Maybe we can connect those two. So it's finding those. And I think, you know, for me, especially because I preach this, I do try to get really creative. So I'll use some of the same tools that we just villainized, like look at Facebook events and see things, you know, in our area. You know, we went to a lantern drop, you know, where you put candles and lanterns and drop them off, because that was kind of a quasi-spiritual experience. But really just trying to find activities that will, you know, grow these rich memories for both the children and me, because that's something that I value. And so even though that comes from a sense of duty, I'm making it fun. And so it's things that I look forward to. Like, I'll give you another example that's coming up this weekend. I think this was brought up in the bio, but I'm a VW aficionado. So I have this old VW bus, and we were told that we needed to give popsicles out in our homeowners association because all the neighbors that have kids have kind of been anointed. And so it's something that I have to do, but we're going to make it a big fun event where we're going to turn my, I think you call them combis.
Combi vans.
Yeah. We call them buses. And so I'm going to turn my bus into a makeshift ice cream truck and go feed all the children in the neighborhood with ice cream cones. And
that sounds like fun for all concerned.
Yeah, we could have just brought out a cooler and sat there and sort of done that sense of duty, but we're making them a little bit fun. We'll probably add some music because I love music too. But so it's always just this conscious choice of like, and I'm not saying be weird about it, right? I think that's actually sometimes why there's a resonance with a certain type of audience that I attract, because I'm not advocating going out there and like wearing a silly bow tie and being a clown, you know, like it's just what is fun for you. And that could be low arousal type stuff. So fun for my wife is figuring out time where she can actually read novels that light her up, because rock concerts are her thing. Mm-hmm. Her thing. We talked about self-care, you know, at the end of the previous episode. That can be mean a whole host of things. Like, what is it that actually invites vitality back into your system? You know, for some folks, that is extroverted type behavior. For some folks, it's just the chance to renew without any sort of, you know, obligation from the outside world. So fun is what fun is.
And I think just that notion of what lights you up, that's a phrase that I've used, and really I find it personally meaningful, because I think it gives you an almost visceral sense of I've done something, that I just feel a sense of energy now that I didn't have before. Like, it has kind of filled me up, or it's lit me up, or it's given me a little boost or jolt of joy. And, you know, again, as I'm thinking about my own practical experience, one of the things that I have prescribed to clients and also prescribed for myself is comedy. Because I've always enjoyed comedy. And so replacing a yielding experience, like just flicking through the mindless pictures and, you know, reels and TikTok videos and things with watching, you know, you can do it. I do a 20-minute episode of a comedy series that I enjoy, which just, yeah, gives me a sense of energy. And I think I also enjoy the creativity, and I love, you know, because I envy these people who can create these sorts of things and do this kind of work. Simple way of swapping out a yielding activity for something that is more energizing.
And you brought up a good point that another thing is that sometimes, again, the last episode we talked about health equity. Another thing that's been studied is that at the onset, when you try to do these sort of big types of behavior change, they can seem like they're not as invigorating at first because, one, you're having to change your behavior, but two, you might not necessarily at the onset have the energy to do it, right? So maybe, you know, on Wednesdays, that's when you plop down on the couch and like kind of just veg out. But if you change that with like a hobby that actually lights you up, those first couple of weeks, it might be like, because you're used to that sort of, you know, spin down, might be like, I don't know if this is going to work. But there's a majority of the people will find that that's actually more invigorating over time, where they'll look forward to that and they'll actually have more energy the next day. So it's another one of those weird ones where it's really hard, like the first or second week when you're actually changing the behavior, because you don't necessarily feel like, you know, it is sort of invigorating you. But if you stick with it, as long as it's something that you like, swapping that out, even though paradoxically you would think like, because you have to get out of the house and actually engage in that activity, well, aren't I expending energy? It is something that you like, it almost always fills you back up. And that's where it gets nuanced though, right? Like, so for an introvert, that might actually be somewhere riding in a coffee shop where people aren't bothering you because you have that kind of self-control over your time and what you're doing. For an extrovert, it might be something like dancing. So that's where it gets difficult. You can't necessarily prescribe one thing, right? Because dancing in a bunch of people might be the most agonizing activity. For
some. Yeah, oh, plenty right. of people told me, oh my goodness, that would be my newest nightmare.
And that's like another interesting thing to pack in the Western world is like we've championed the classic influencer photo, right? Is someone in the middle of a bunch of people doing a jumping jack or whatever. It's like there is the other half of people on the planet would rather just, you know, be under an umbrella. And so again, like there's no one way to have fun, but once you decide what that is, finding ways to interweave it into your life becomes extremely important. And we're really deprived of that right now because, you know, we do feel like the world's on fire, right? There's so many external things telling us that we're in danger, where that's always sort of been the case. This illusion of safety. I mean, you know, Helen Keller said it best, like it's kind of this beautiful illusion, but there's an abundance of good too. So it's your choice to either search that out or search out the bad. And again, just so that this isn't complete toxic positivity, we do all have a propensity to look for the bad. I mean, if you do believe in evolution, and I do, there is an evolutionary understanding why that would be the case, because we should be more aware of the things that are going to kill us than the things that bring us joy. But what we do know now, especially in the modern world, is how important it is to encapsulate those things that do light us up, because those are the things that make us want to live, right? And so being mindful of that and kind of, again, using that metaphor, stacking the deck in your favor becomes so important because we are predispositioned to look for the bad, and we're fed it because, you know, media outlets know that they stack the deck so that you are satiated by things that make you want to pay attention, which is kind of sad, but it's just how things are.
But what you've reminded of us today is that we do have choices in all of those things. I think that awareness, I think that understanding that this notion of fun and play is an individual, not just an individual choice. I mean, we make the choices about how we use our time, and we'll put those details of that play model in the show notes so that people can refer to that as well. And of course, it will be in the book when it comes out. But that what lights you up is going to be different depending on who you are. So there is a lot, and just like we know in our field that human behavior is wonderfully complex and nuanced, and there isn't. And one of the biggest challenges is that there is no one size fits all for everybody. So hopefully from today's discussion, our listeners have a greater sense of awareness around your own choice to have fun, a choice in how you use your time, that consideration of what you're doing with your time and paying some attention to that, and trying to then think about the little activities or sometimes big activities that light you up, that are going to give you those energetic boosts, that are going to contribute to a sense of fun in your lives, and then putting that into action. Thank you, Mike. Another Amazing conversation. And again, so many other things we could talk about, and we will over the coming episodes. So we'll leave that one there for today for our listeners. All the details, some of the resources and research that Mike has mentioned will be in the show notes. And we'll see you back for our next episode on fun and well-being.
See you guys soon.
So if you'd like to know more about Mike's play model for optimizing time for fun, you can find a link to this in the show notes for today's episode. And our question for you today, remember you can answer your questions on your Spotify or Anchor podcast player. Our question for today is, which of life's activities will you swap out for more fun? Will it be those yielding activities or maybe the agonizing ones? If you are listening via Spotify or Anchor FM, you will see our Q&A question in the notes for this episode. Pop your response in there. It is private, so no one else will see it but me, but I'd love to hear from you, and maybe we can incorporate some of our conversation into a future episode. If you're not listening on Spotify or Anchor, we're asking the same question on our social channels, and you can always send me an email via the Potential Psychology website, potential.com.au, where you will also find the show notes and a transcript of today's conversation, as well as a great Q&A with Dr. Mike. And there's the resources that we've mentioned in today's show and a space for you to subscribe to our newsletter. And don't forget that you can now become a special VIP member of the Potential Psychology podcast community with access to bonus episodes. You'll find out more on the website, potential.com.au, or at anchor.fm/potentialpsychology/subscribe. And my new mini online course, Thriving Post-Pandemic Tips for Wellbeing and Well-Doing, is live on our website. It is me. It's exploring the impact of the pandemic and what's done to us all, and then providing you with some practical tips and strategies for getting from just surviving back to thriving. It's an hour or so of video content with downloadable guides, and it's only $50, a small investment for a thriving life. I will be back with Dr. Mike Rucker in our next episode to talk about fun, well-being, and work. But until then, stay safe, stay well, and take small steps to fulfill your potential.